Welcome to Murderous Monsters. Before we begin today, a brief warning. Contents may be disturbing and language may be explicit and inappropriate for young listeners. So listener discretion is advised. Hey guys, it's Marie.
Hey, hey, it's Shelby and a special guest, little Penny down here. She wanted to be a part of the action.
Yes, Shelby is puppy sitting or dog sitting for one of your military friends. Is that right?
Yeah. I'll be gone for a little while. And because I'm home all the time, I guess she just kind of grew attached to my hip. Literally, she is like here at my hip.
She is precious.
She's so sweet.
Okay, but well, this week is Shelby's week, so we're going to let her tell us a story.
Alrighty. So today, let's talk about the game show killer, Rodney Alcala. So Alcala was born as, and I'm going to do my best here, Rodrigo Jacques Alcala Bucor in San Antonio, Texas, on August 23rd of 1943. Hold on.
Okay.
Get down.
She's trying to get behind you.
Yes. That wasn't going to last long. Moving on. He moved to Texas with his family when he was around 8 years old, and his father abandoned the family while they were in Mexico. Alcala, his siblings, and mother later relocated to Los Angeles. So at the age of 17, Alcala joined the Army. He was discharged in 1964 after suffering a breakdown and being diagnosed with an antisocial personality disorder. He attended California State University, then transferred to UCLA. He graduated with a fine arts degree in 1968. After fleeing California that year, Alcala used John Berger as an alias to enroll in New York University, where he took a class with Roman Polanski. So we're going to hear John Berger a lot.
Okay.
Just a little background. If you don't know who Roman Polanski is, he's a Best Director Oscar winner for The Pianist out of 2002. Yeah. And his career was inevitably overshadowed by the shocking murder of second wife Sharon Tate and his statutory rape of a 13-year-old girl, which resulted in him becoming one of America's most high-profile fugitives. That's Roman Polanski.
Yeah, I remember the Sharon Tate murders. That was all part of Charlie Manson.
Yeah.
And stuff like
so
that.
So that's just like a little tidbit. Like that's who he went to school with.
Yeah.
Or was around in this time. So
yeah.
Just to give you like a little piece of
And wasn't Sharon pregnant with what's his name again?
Roman Polanski.
Roman. Wasn't she pregnant? She was like 8 months pregnant with his baby whenever she was killed by the Manson family.
I'm not sure. I mean, that might have been the thing. I didn't really do a whole deep dive in him or anything, but I saw the name and I was like, why does that sound familiar? Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to throw in just like a little side note there.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was the case.
That's horrible.
Not to correct you in any way whatsoever, but it's Alcala.
So I heard it on the game show as
and they
Alcala.
Called him, really?
Rodney Alcala. Yeah.
Well, everything I've ever heard it on was Alcala, but
I based it off of the game show.
Okay.
Because I watched the full game show video. It's on YouTube and it's like 5 or 6 minutes long, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And how they say his name is Alcala.
Huh. Okay.
So I don't know.
Remember that.
Honestly.
I mean, look, me either.
I'm really not sure.
Either way, he was a dirtbag.
Because I wasn't sure.
That's fine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know. I really honestly didn't know, because it's just the English language is just so confusing, because you know, there's just certain letters that can sound like many different things. So I just kind of took that and ran with it. So if it however it's pronounced, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Whatever it is, it's fine.
Yeah. But anyways.
Okay. Sorry.
You're fine. You're fine. After fleeing the scene of his 1968 attack on 8-year-old, and I might butcher this, and I really don't mean to. Again, the English language. Tali Shapiro, Alcala traveled to the East Coast. In 1971, he was included on the FBI's most wanted list. Some girls at an arts camp in New Hampshire recognized their counselor, who was using the name John Berger, from this list. They told the camp's dean, and Alcala was soon arrested, though he was able to plead to the lesser charge of child molestation and serve just 34 months. So.
Can I ask a question? So the little girl that he assaulted, she was 8, right?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
So
I'm sorry.
this was just like the first of many.
Right.
So though he was a registered sex offender, Alcala managed to land a job with the Los Angeles Times as a typesetter in September of 77. His past conviction for sexual assault prompted California police to interview Alcala in March of 78 as a potential suspect in the Hillside Strangler killings, which were another set of serial murders that occurred in California in the 70s. Alcala was cleared of those crimes, and police did not realize they had actually spoken with a different serial killer. So, from this point,
California was running rampant.
Yeah.
With
In the
killers.
70s, especially, you know. But I just want to point out at this point, my research, the way that everything is explained, it's kind of explained piece by piece. So the dates are kind of shifted and everything. So I'm going to try to make sure we keep up with that.
Okay.
So in September of 1978, Alcala appeared as Bachelor Number One on The Dating Game, which was a TV show that had men and women cheekily interview prospective dates sight unseen. At the time, he was a convicted child molester, but the show did not run a background check.
Convenient.
Probably why we don't see these anymore. Just saying, yeah. So Alcala was introduced as a, quote, successful photographer who got his start when his father found him in the dark room at the age of 13, fully developed, end quote. So that was the game show host, how he introduced him. Okay. Which is just kind of odd. You
know, oh, it's just gross.
Really weird way to introduce a person in general. So this is what got me. When asked by Cheryl Bradshaw, his prospect...
Perspective.
Yes, that words are hard.
Yes.
Date to describe what kind of meal he'd be, he answered, quote, I'm called the banana and I look really good. Peel me, end quote.
Ick.
I mean,
there's
really.
Just so many ick factors in that sentence.
And it's not just, you know, what we know about him. You know, I mean, it's just, why would you say something like that? You know, it's just weird. Anyways.
The 70s, that was the time, let me tell you.
So his use of charm and innuendo won him a date with Bradshaw. However, when they met face to face, she felt Alcala was acting really creepy and opted not to go out with him. Smart move.
Good for her.
Alcala was a tall and good-looking man who often told women he was a fashion photographer who wanted to take photos for a contest. His intelligence and charm could make him persuasive. A woman who missed a date with Alcala because he had been arrested in 1979 later told People, quote, he was so easy to trust. He had a way of talking to people that really put them at ease, end quote. So this, at this point, gave me like real Ted Bundy vibes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like the good looking, the being persuasive and intelligent and photographer. You know, there's just so many things that I was just like, this is like Ted Bundy made over.
Oh, yeah. Very charming. Yeah.
The dog is playing and she never plays, but now she does. Anywho, in the 1970s, Alcala killed. Again, I'm going to try with this name. Cornelia Criley, 23, and Ellen Hover, 23. Both were residents of New York City. Criley was raped and strangled with her own stockings in her apartment in June of 71. And Hover disappeared on July 15th, 1977, leaving behind a calendar that stated she was meeting with John Berger. Her remains were discovered in New York's Westchester County in 1978. Alcala pleaded guilty to these murders in 2012. He received a sentence of 25 to life, though it will only be served if California releases him from custody. So that was when he was on the East Coast.
I was fixing, that was one of my questions I was about to ask was, how did we get from California to the East Coast?
Remember when I referenced earlier when he was in New York with Roman Polanski?
Okay, that
happened in that time frame.
Gotcha.
But they would only be able to charge him that if he would do it in California.
I got you. Okay.
Alcala was arrested in July of 1979 for the abduction and murder of 12-year-old Robin Samso of Huntington Beach, California. This is when he went back to California.
Okay.
He was convicted on these charges in 1980. Following the disappearance of Samso, a sketch of a suspect was issued. Alcala's parole officer saw it and recognized him, and police tracked him down, and he was arrested on July 24th, 1979. Following his arrest, police found hundreds of his photographs in a Seattle storage locker. These images, some of which were explicit, may include other Alcala victims. He compiled a collection of more than 1,000 photographs of women, teenage girls, and boys, many in sexually explicit poses. Part of the case against him was a pair of gold earrings linked to Samso that had been found in his Seattle storage locker. So basically what I gathered out of the research is when he kidnapped this young girl and killed her, then they were able to kind of find this other information to link all these other people to him, is kind of what I gathered.
And if I'm not mistaken, I believe that the earrings were actually one of his ways of trophies. Like there, when he was later on down the line, they had found several different pairs of earrings from different, if I'm remembering the case correctly, it's been a long time since I heard it.
I'm not sure. But I do make another comment about the earrings a little later on.
Okay.
But that's the only pair that I saw. A lot of it was the pictures that was referenced. I froze.
You did, but I can still hear you.
Okay, that's what matters. Okay,
that's
good.
All that matters.
Just making sure. Just making sure. We don't need any more technical difficulties.
I might not be able to see you moving, but as long as I hear you, that's all that matters.
But anyways, so this is kind of the part where it jumps a little bit forward. So it wasn't until 2016 when he was charged with the 1977 murder of a woman that was actually identified in one of his photos.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Alcala is known to have assaulted one other photographic subject, and police have speculated that others could be rape or murder victims as well. In addition, he faced charges for assaulting and strangling four women in California in the late 70s. 18-year-old Jill Barcombe, who was killed in November of 77, 27-year-old Georgia Wixt, 27, who was raped, beaten, and strangled in December of 78, 32-year-old Charlotte Lamb, who was killed in June of 78, and 21-year-old Jill Parenteau, who was killed in June of 79. Alcala opted to represent himself during the court proceedings.
Okay, that's another Ted Bundy reference, right?
Yeah,
because didn't
basically.
Ted try to, yeah.
So all the bodies were found posed in carefully chosen positions. Another pair of earrings found in Alcala's Seattle storage locker had residue that matched Lamb's DNA. During his incarceration, between the second and third trials, Alcala actually wrote and self-published a book, You, the Jury, is the title, in which he claimed innocence in the Samso case and suggested a different suspect. So he's trying to point the finger in somebody else's direction so that he wouldn't have to face the consequences, in other
of
words.
Of course, yeah.
He also filed two lawsuits against the California law system for a slip and fall incident and for refusing to provide him a low-fat diet.
Oh, whatever.
You know, jeez. I just find it so, you know, like, how can you be so demanding when you have committed We don't even know truly what you did,
Right.
honestly.
Yeah.
All the heinous acts that you committed over time, and yet you're fussing about they're not providing you the right diet.
Yeah.
Come on now.
I mean, that's that's what you're going with? The diet? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, why not? Got to shoot for something. Shoot for the stars. Why not?
Yeah.
So in 2003, prosecutors entered a motion to join the SAMHSA charges with those of the four newly discovered victims. So those four were the names that I listed previously, and then SAMHSA. Alcala's attorneys contested it, as one of them explained, quote, if you're a juror and you hear one murder case, you may be able to have reasonable doubt. But it's very hard to say you have reasonable doubt on all five, especially when four of the five aren't alleged by eyewitnesses, but are proven by DNA matches, end quote.
Right. I mean, did, was there a reference between these murders and his photographs? Were they able to find the photographs of these women?
So how
His...
I understood this statement is because they pretty much forced him to give his like DNA. So that could have been on anything. Could have been a fork.
I see.
Could have been a drink. Could have been something.
Okay.
And so basically they took his DNA at this point, and I'm assuming that's how they connected them. Or it could have been the pictures, because they were able to identify another victim, you know, in recent years based on his pictures.
Yeah. Okay.
I got a thing that popped up. You still hear me, right?
Yeah, no. I hear you. I just can't
Okay.
see you.
Okay. I was just making
You're
sure, because
frozen. Yeah.
I got a thing that had popped up, so I want to make sure you didn't
Yeah.
lose me.
No, you're good. You're good.
Moving forward. Okay. So in 2006, the California Supreme Court ruled in the prosecution's favor, and in February of 2010, Alcala stood trial on the five joint charges. So it just kind of blows my mind just how long it took from 2003 to 2010 for them to charge on these five different women.
What blows my mind is the fact that it was only how many, what was that, 2010, 2020, it was only 14 years ago, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't realize, I've heard this case, but I didn't realize that it, a
that
lot of it was
recent.
that recent, right? Yeah.
Well, I think he did a bulk of this, from my understanding, a bulk of everything happened around in the 70 era.
Yeah.
Era. And then when he was getting arrested and going through trial and everything, that kind of happened in the early 2000s.
Right.
But anyways. So for the third trial, because he went to trial three times, Alcala elected to act as his own attorney. He took the stand in his own defense and for 5 hours played the roles of both interrogator and witness, asking himself questions, addressing himself as Mr. Alcala in a deeper than normal voice, and then answering them. Okay.
That referring to yourself in the third person, using different voices and stuff like that, that had to be agonizing for the people who were actually there in the court. You know
wouldn't
what I'm
you not
saying?
be so annoyed at that point with this man? Because at this point, you're really just making a fool out of yourself.
Exactly.
You know? But during this self-questioning and answering session, he told jurors, often in a rambling monotone, that he was at Knott's Berry Farm applying for a job as a photographer at the time SAMHSA was kidnapped, which was the 12-year-old. He showed the jury a portion of his 1978 appearance on The Dating Game in an attempt to prove that the earrings found that they suspected were SAMHSA's from the locker that they found these earrings in. And he said there he is, because he had earrings at that point.
Oh my God.
That was,
okay.
that was, that's what his excuse was for that.
They were mine.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yep.
Okay.
But Jed Mills, the actor who competed against Alcala on the show, told a reporter that earrings were not yet a socially acceptable statement for men in 1978. Quote, I had never seen a man with an earring in his ear. I would have noticed them on him, end quote.
Yeah, that wasn't a thing back then.
Yeah.
Not for straight men, anyway.
Right. I remember, I don't know the exact era, but I do know that, like, homosexual men would wear an earring. What was it, in the right or left ear?
Right ear,
To
queer, left ear, Left ear buccaneer, right ear queer, or something like that. And I don't, y'all don't come at me for that. That was just a phrase that was used back in the day. And that
Well,
was
I just
like,
remember that was a thing to say. I guess that was like
yeah,
how you, when you went out in public, that's how people
identified.
know
Right,
because they
right.
weren't as open about it as they are now. So that's how they were able to kind of,
Yeah. And I remember, I'm gonna date myself here. Y'all know I'm old, but excuse me. Like in the mid late 80s was actually when that first started to become a thing. Because like my cousin, he wanted an earring, and I pierced his ear, like I don't know, late 80s or something like that. That's when it actually started to be a cool thing for, like straight guys or whatnot.
Yeah, because I do know, like I even went to school with some guys that had their ears pierced, and then the gauges got really big and stuff like that,
Yeah.
But I just, it's just I find it really disturbing that he tried to brush it off, like, oh no, those aren't anyone's, those are mine. See, I had them on
Right.
here, and I still don't know because even if you look it up on YouTube, no matter the quality that you have on your phone or computer, it still comes out really grainy looking.
Sure,
So I
because it was
mean,
so long ago, yeah.
right. So I mean, I don't know how it is that you could even try to use that because you can't see anything. And plus, I'll put pictures on our group page and everything, but his hair was kind of mid-length, kind of long for a guy,
Right. And that's probably one of the things he was using too. You couldn't really tell, but you
Right.
couldn't say that it wasn't, you know
You
what I mean?
couldn't say yes and you couldn't say no at that,
Right.
I guess, is what he was going for. It's just
Right.
classic narcissistic behavior. I mean,
Absolutely.
let me just gaslight the jury into believing that those are actually my earrings.
Yeah, I mean, because that's what he was good at. You know what I'm
So
saying?
how do you explain all the thousands of pictures of people in these God knows what kind of positions they were in?
Sure.
I mean, I don't even want to see those photos. This dude was just sick.
Absolutely. He was. And that
But
was
if
a big ruse too back in the day. There are several different killers that actually used the whole I'm a photographer thing because everybody wanted
yes.
to be a star, everybody wanted to be a model. I mean,
Yep.
and a lot of them used that because that would be the way that they could, oh, well, come and meet me at my
Jeffrey
apartment, blah, blah,
Dahmer.
blah, blah. Yeah. Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy. Did Ted use the photography? I don't
I
think he
think
used photography, but there were
he
several
was just really
different ones.
charming, so I guess he
Yeah.
just kind of came off. I mean, I think he just used whatever ruse he could just to
Sure.
get anybody over there to him. But that was a really common thing. If we go back and look at some of the serial killers in that era,
Yeah.
we that's a repetitive thing is, oh, I'm a
Excuse me.
photographer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because everybody wanted their picture taken. Everybody wanted to be famous.
So Alcala made no significant attempt to dispute the four added charges, other than to assert that he would not remember killing any of the women. As part of his closing argument, he played the Arlo Guthrie song, Alice's Restaurant, in which the protagonist tells a psychiatrist that he wants to kill. Why? Just why? Just why?
Just go ahead.
This, I mean, it just makes me laugh because I couldn't imagine being in the same room as him trying to defend himself, and he's just, in hindsight, making a huge fool of himself.
Absolutely. Oh,
Of
yeah.
so of course, after less than 2 days deliberation, the jury convicted him on all five counts of first degree murder. A surprise witness during the penalty phase of the trial was Shapiro. Richard, ooh. I don't know how to say his last name. I'm not even going to try. Richard, a psychiatrist paid by Alcala and the only defense witness, testified that borderline personality disorder could explain his claims that he had no memory of committing the murders. The
Bullshit. Sorry.
prosecutor argued that Alcala was a sexual predator who knew what he was doing was wrong and did not care.
I believe that
I really hate because
guy.
mental health is such a huge thing, and especially because we're still figuring out almost every day, it seems, something new, something that people are suffering with. And yet you have people like him. Of course, this wasn't as big of a thing back then, but it just kind of leads you to believe like somebody that is sick in the head, that wants to commit murders and everything, wants to try to point the blame more so on, oh, I wasn't in my right mind. I was not thinking right, or I'm insane and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
And it just kind of leaves a bad rap for people that are actually dealing with those emotions and dealing with these psychosis and everything, you know? And it's just,
Sure.
it bothers me that, you know, oh, well, I have this, so that's why I'm acting like this. No. No.
Yeah, and I mean that's a thing all the way to present day. I mean, it
Exactly.
really is, because although we know a whole lot more about mental health issues, bipolar issues, you know, schizophrenia, things like that, we know a whole lot more about that now than we did back in the day. But people still use it to their advantage. I mean, people who get in trouble, you know, even to this day, will use that, what is it, not guilty by reason of insanity, or
Yes.
mental defect, or whatever the case may be, and they try to prove that. However, it's a lot more difficult for them to be able to prove it in today's society than it was back
Sure.
then. But yeah, I mean, and he was a fairly intelligent person. I mean, he knew that
Right.
he could call on that, and there would be a lot of people that who didn't understand it that would be like, well, maybe, you know, for him to do things
Right.
like that, maybe that is a valid, you know, cause or whatnot. So, I
Exactly.
mean, and I am 100% with you on that. As far as it's sickening that some people are able to use that as an excuse, when there are really people out here who have been sent to prison, who have been sentenced to death, even who actually had a problem, but it was never recognized.
Yes. Yeah. I just hate that.
Absolutely, yeah.
This I probably should have put before that last paragraph, but you know, we're going to roll with it.
Okay.
So before Alcala was retried the third time for Samso's death, advances in the world of DNA and other crime scene analysis provided evidence tying him to more crimes. So this is where he had been forced to provide the DNA sample. So at his next trial, which took place in 2010, Alcala was again charged with killing Samso. So this was that third trial that we just kind of talked about that just had a little bit more detail. But in 2010, police shared many of the photos that they had found, all the thousands and everything, with
Right.
how they were positioned. I don't even want to know the details, but they did that in hopes of identifying those in the pictures.
Yeah,
And
they
some
did a.
people,
Go ahead,
oh,
I'm sorry.
sorry.
No, go ahead.
Some people were alive and came forward, and the photos aided in identifying Thornton as one of Alcala's victims. In February of 2010, he was found guilty of all five and was sentenced to death in March 2010. What were you
Yeah.
saying?
No, I was going to say that I believe the way that some of that went down was when he was actually convicted and things like that, they took those pictures and they put them up as like a wall of pictures and put it out to the public so that people who were looking for their loved ones, or even victims themselves who he may not have actually murdered, but may have, you know, sexually assaulted or something like that, would be able to come forward, and they would be able to take those pictures down. So they would be able to, by process of elimination, know who they could identify and who they couldn't. Now, there's still hundreds of pictures to this day that they haven't been able to identify, but there were some number that did come forward, and they were able to put those pictures to rest.
Yeah, no. I know that some people were actually alive that he had or gotten his hands on, or whatever the case may be. I don't know what he exactly did with those people. But you know, you just start thinking back, like some of the people that came back and they were alive, you know, I just wonder what his plan was. You know, how did he choose his victims between who would live and who would not, you know?
And maybe, excuse me, I don't know this to be fact. I'm just, you know, theorizing here.
Speculating.
Yeah, speculating. But maybe some of those were in the beginning, before he actually, you know, was ready to, you know, carry it all the way through.
Sure.
Or, I mean, it could have been a situation where he was, the opportunity wasn't ideal for him to be able to do or go through with what he actually wanted to do to that person at that time. I mean, who's to say? I mean,
Right.
we'll never know.
I know. It's really sad, but It just had me curious, you know. I don't, and it, I think it does with anybody that's a serial killer. How do you know, pick and choose who gets to live and who doesn't, I guess.
Right.
Like, but we're fast forwarding a few years here. So in 2016, Alcala was charged with the 1977 killing of Christine Ruth Thornton in Wyoming. That was the woman that they identified in the pictures. Though prosecutors opted not to extradite him to stand trial, authorities also believe he killed Pamela Lamson in the San Francisco Bay Area in the fall of 77. However, DNA collected at that crime scene was too degraded to test, so he was not charged with the crime. So that was something else that kind of had me thinking too. Like when they pulled him in for questioning and, you know, on the Hillside Strangle killings and everything, you know, and then he's leaving a trail of bodies. But in the 70s, you know, in California, there was a number of people that were leaving a trail of bodies just everywhere, you know.
There were a number of serial killers all operating at the same time.
Yeah.
So,
And around in around the same area as
right.
well, you know. So just, I mean, honestly, if you were gonna do it, that would have been the time. I'm not condoning it. You can't go back in time. But, you know,
But
it's just saying like that. I mean, there's no telling how many he got away with truly if at that time before the DNA was, you know, collected and as advanced as it was in the early 2000s between the 70s to then, you know, however many more people that he could have left behind that they were never able to actually identify or
Because
find.
there's no telling the number of people, the number of bodies and things like that that turned up at that particular point in time, and who they attributed them to, if they even found them at all. Because back in that particular time, mid late 70s, early 80s, things like that, they had no idea how to pinpoint. It's like you were just saying, DNA was nowhere near as advanced as it is now. Even fingerprinting wasn't as advanced as it is now. So, and with that many people operating in the same area, I mean, it was a toss up to who got credit for what,
No, I couldn't imagine being an investigator at that point in time and dealing with all of these different types of crimes and, you know, wondering, you know, what person this is, if it's, you know, this one that you've already somewhat identified, you know, you gave them little nicknames or whatever, you know, and, you know, how do you relate it to this person and that person without DNA? So it's just an
And
interesting take on it.
it is. And to follow up on that, I mean, at the end of the late 70s, I think it was 78 when the actual phrase ki serial killer came to be. You know what I mean? So they didn't, I don't know that they really put two and two together at that particular point in time as far as one person being capable of doing all these things. I mean, that did they think it was random murders? Did they, would that were they attributing it to, this area is this guy, that area is that guy? I mean, it was a crapshoot on what.
I bet that was a rough job to have back then,
Oh
honestly,
yeah, I couldn't
to be
imagine.
investigating all of that and then not really know how to handle it, how to identify it, how to anything it.
Oh yeah.
So anyways, some Alcala victims survived his attacks. In 1968, a witness spotted Alcala driving off with Shapiro, which was the 8-year-old. Concerned, he followed them to an apartment and called the police. The responding officer discovered Shapiro, who'd been raped and beaten with a steel bar but was still alive. In February of 1979, Monique Hoyt, then 15, managed to escape after Alcala raped her. So this was like an ongoing thing for him. It seemed that he liked young people, children, adolescents, because I mean an 8-year-old is a child
That's
and then
absolutely.
15 is an adolescent, you know. So it seemed like he didn't really have a preference because all of his victims seemed to string out from different age ranges. I mean, you had a 32-year-old, you know, and then you have an 8-year-old. It's just, I don't really know like what his target was, if it was, if he was going after people that maybe were alone, people that maybe weren't around anyone.
I feel like it was victims of opportunity.
Yeah,
You know what I mean?
basically.
Depending on where they were, if he could get them away, you know, things like that. That's
Right.
the way I look at it. Yeah.
So Alcala's case was examined on the November 8th. Yeah, I thought I skipped a part. November 18th, 2017 episode of the Reels channel, Murder Made Me Famous, which spoke of several people involved in the case, many of whom rarely gave interviews. Now, I couldn't actually find this. I really wanted to watch that, but I wanted to put that out there in case you or any of our listeners wanted to look that up. But it's an episode about him on Murder Made Me Famous.
Okay. Yeah, I'll jot that down and see if I can look it up.
Yeah, well, apparently it was some of the survivors that had gave like a little interview, you know, like kind of like how we watch like little documentaries and stuff,
Yeah.
food crime documentaries. So I thought that was interesting. I just wanted to put that out there.
And it was Murder Made Me Famous.
Murder Made Me Famous.
Okay.
Decades after Alcala's horrific crimes, the victims' families are still grappling with the pain he inflicted. Robin Samso was just 12 years old when Alcala saw her riding her bike to ballet class in 1979. So we know how he targeted her because obviously she was alone. But, you know, I saw this thing. I think it was TikTok or it might have been Facebook. I can't remember. It was earlier this week, but, you know, it said something about like how serial killers or how just, you know, people in, like that in general target their victims and stuff. And you'll get a kick out of this, but they usually don't target, you know, people that look unapproachable, that have, you know, RBF. So
I think I'm good.
I went to Doug and I was like, you know, no wonder I've never ran into any kind of thing like that because I have serious, so bad RBF. And I've always said, you know, I feel like I look unapproachable because when I'm just sitting there, I don't just smile. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. I just look real like intimidating, I guess, you
Same.
know?
I had my the guy that works for me today, he was talking about, well, you look aggravated. I was like, it's my face.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to look. You know what I'm
Right.
saying?
It's and the people that have this problem, like they'll understand because like I can't fix my face. I'm not, you know, I'm not really sure how I'm looking. But as soon as somebody comes up to me, I'm like, oh hey, you know, and you can't see because my thing is frozen. But you know,
But I know you, so I know what your
yeah.
face looks like.
Right. But you know, it changes, you know, and it's
Yeah.
just I just thought that that was really interesting to think about
Well,
just in situations like that.
it's funny that you say that because there was a guy, he works in another department at the dealership where I work at, and he come over to me today. I don't know him that well. He hasn't really been with us that long, and he doesn't work in the same building that I work in. But anyway, he come up to me today, and he was like, "Hey, are you the, such and such?" And I could feel my face because I don't know him. I was like,
Yeah.
"Yeah, and." And I'm thinking to myself now that you bring that up, God, I must have looked like such a bitch because I'm just standing there looking at him like, yeah, and
Yeah.
he came over there genuinely to talk to me and to like compliment my work and stuff like that. I was like, hey, can I make an appointment with you or whatever? And I was like, well, yeah, that's fine,
Yeah.
but I could only imagine sometimes how people look and see me as just my regular. Looking at you, serious
Yeah.
face. You know what I
Yeah.
mean?
No, I totally get it. And I just thought that that was like kind of interesting to think about, you know, because
Yeah.
in today's world, especially, you know, well, I'm married now, but you know, a couple of years ago when I was still single and you know, I'd do things, I'd go out by myself and stuff, meet up with friends, but you know, I just kind of think about all the times that I probably could have been vulnerable to something. And that's kind of how these people target their victims is they look for a vulnerable female or, you know, whatever to target and everything, you know, but it's just, I guess it's all about appearance and you just never know what could be going through somebody's mind. But I just thought that that was really interesting to kind of keep in the back of your mind. You know, just I
It
don't even know
is.
if I
It
could
really
find it
is.
again, but
Because I work with a girl who is the exact opposite of you and I. I mean, she's just so open and so easily. I don't know. You know how the saying goes that they pick the weakest of the herd. You know, like out in the wild and stuff like that. They'll like corner off the weakest of the herd, and that's the one that they, you know, that they go after. And I think that that has a lot to do with what you're saying, is that somebody who looks sweet and innocent and gullible or whatever, they can almost sense it. You know what I mean?
Yes. It's like an aura that they put off, kind of, you know. And you know, and I didn't want to put it like that, you know, but it really and truly is. You can just kind of sense if somebody's basically going to fight you back or not. Because I always say, like, if I'm watching a true crime show or something like that, we watched a movie last night, and the whole time I'm sitting there, like, you just gonna let this man do that? Let somebody try me like that? I'm fixing to pop them in the mouth. I'm fixing to break your nose. I'm
Yeah,
fixing
you're
to
fixing,
fight.
yeah, something's gonna be left.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, you're not, you might kill me. I mean,
you're
and
gonna have to kill me because
that
I'm
exactly.
fighting. I am fighting there,
Yeah, I don't
and
care
they
what you're
gonna
doing.
find you because my DNA is gonna be all over you because I am messing you up. But
I'm
that's
a
just,
yeah, I'm gonna spit, I'm gonna bite, I'm gonna scratch, I'm gonna kick. I don't care. We both feast, we both gonna be bleeding. So
But yeah, no, I just thought that that was kind of interesting to think about. So this was Marianne Connolly. This was Robin Samso's mom. She called the police and said her daughter was missing, and they told her they couldn't take a report for at least 24 hours. But by the
That
next morning, when she never came home, they declared it a kidnapping. Now, again, this happened in 1979. So I'm just going to say with good graces that maybe they didn't, I won't say take it as seriously, but maybe they just kind of had to see because, you know, things were different in that time.
I
Maybe she went
understand
and stayed at
that.
a friend's house. You know, they just were kind of, you know, trying to process of elimination kind of thing. But she wasn't a 12-year-old girl. So I don't know.
It has always really bothered me when they, and some states still have it, to where you have to wait 24 hours to report a person missing, especially an adult, because they are able to, you know, leave without alerting anyone or telling anybody where they're going or whatever. But if I it I it has always irked the shit out of me, that it has been a law or it has been a thing that the police departments have to do. Because I'm going to tell you something. If I call you and I tell you that my husband is missing, my husband is missing. I live with him. I know him. Even if my daughter was missing, I will let you know she's missing. You know what I'm saying? I'm not coming to
Something ain't
you.
right.
Right. I'm not coming to you as a fly by night. Oh, well, I haven't talked to. No. I know my child. I know my husband. I know my friend. I know them. And if I come to you, it's because something's wrong.
Wrong, right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Because I don't care if you know them or not. I do. And that's been something that has always bothered me really bad, especially with children, because it is a statistical fact that most children are killed within the first hour if they are a child that will fight you. Within the first 3 hours, if they are able to accomplish whatever goal that they have decided to accomplish with this child, and almost no child survives the first 24 hours. It's just a statistical fact. So.
No, I'm definitely with you there. I don't agree with that, but again, like, I don't know what kind of rules were in place in 1979 as far as that
Yeah,
goes. If
I
it
mean,
was, and
everything
she's
was
12, so,
right.
you know, things
Everything
were
was a lot.
looked at differently.
Everything was a lot more loosey goosey back then, because I mean, you had latchkey kids, you had people or kids that could leave in the morning and not be back until the street lights came on. So,
And we didn't have cell phones then, so.
no, that wasn't even thought of. No, you were lucky if you had a house phone. Shit.
But unfortunately, I 12 days later, Robin's decomposed remains had been found, scavenged by animals. So Connolly, which again is Robin's mom, recalled what happened when the authorities arrived at her house. "We found Robin," the sergeant said. "I grabbed my purse and said, 'Okay, let's go.' Where do you think you're going? I said to go see Robin. That was the communication between the sergeant and Robin's mom.
Mom.
Like, I mean, what did you think was going to happen? You come home and tell me something like that? Yes,
Well,
I'm
let's go.
leaving. Yeah,
Right.
what?
What are we waiting
So,
on?
but she had to identify the body and said that she couldn't because it took 3 days to identify her daughter's body because of the animals that had
Oh,
scavenged
God.
it.
That poor woman.
Well, of course, when all of this came out and they, figured out that it was Rodney Alcala, she said, she didn't mince words when speaking about him. He's the devil himself, is what she referred to him as.
And she was correct.
Yeah. So Alcala's exact death toll is unknown. Some authorities believe he murdered around 50 people, but others think he may have taken as many as 130 lives.
I would err on the side of a larger number.
Well, because again, it kind of goes back to what we pointed out earlier. We don't really know exactly when all of those other murders were taking place around the same time frame. And, if he dumped this poor 12-year-old girl in an area where animals can get to her, who's to say he didn't do that to other victims and they weren't found before they were eaten?
Or they were just, yeah, they were, yeah.
Or there was before there was nothing left,
But bones
So,
that nobody would recognize it being an actual body.
yeah, exactly. Because I mean, in the wild, especially when you have animals and stuff,
Well, I mean, they
all
scatter.
kinds of
You know what I
everything,
mean?
right? So it's sad to think about. But prosecutors have said that wow, that is spelled really wrong. Alcala, quote unquote, toyed with his victims, strangling them until they lost consciousness, then waiting until they revived, sometimes repeating this process several times before finally killing them. One police detective described Alcala as a killing machine, and others have compared him to Ted Bundy. Alcala is often referred to as the dating game killer because of his appearance on the dating game. And so when he appeared on there, it was in the midst of his killing spree.
I remember that.
But Alcala died on July 24th, 2021, in California while awaiting execution. He was 77. And that is the game show killer.
That is wild. I mean, that is just wild that he survived all the way
Just a couple
until,
years
yeah,
ago.
2 years ago. Yeah.
That's
That is crazy.
insane to me. And so he was just waiting on death row this whole time since pretty much 2010. Of course, he went to trial again in 2016 because they had found that other body and linked him to it. But I mean, you're already sitting on death row. There's really nothing else you can do at that point.
I mean, nothing's gonna make it worse.
But I try to find what the cause was, but it just says natural causes, so probably a heart attack or something to that effect.
Devil says, "Come on, buddy, it's time to go."
So
Well, that was disturbingly interesting.
well, you know how we do.
That's how we do it.
Yeah, but no, in our on the Facebook group page, I'll include like a little snippet, but I'll also post the video link to the video I saw on YouTube.
Of him on the dating game. See if you can find those, like the, I think there's like somewhere there's a big like collage of the pictures as well. You know what I'm talking about? I
Actually,
think there is one.
I think one of my resources had it on their like page, so I might have to go back and see if I can find it. But I saw, or at least I don't know if it's the same one, but I mean, I've saw something with
Because
the
that's one of the main
pictures.
things that I remembered about the case was that when they found those pictures and realized exactly what kind of monster he was and stuff like that, they had put them all together and actually publicized them so that anybody who might be able to recognize someone would be able to come forward.
Right.
So if that is still a thing, if you can find it, then, I mean, we can, putting it out there is always, it's still to this day, it's a good thing. Maybe somebody might recognize, you know, their loved one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, anything else you want to add?
Nope, that's it for me.
Okay. Well, that was really good. You did a great job. And I just want to thank everyone for being with us. Please go like, subscribe, rate, review, and join us on our Facebook group page, Murderers and Monsters. We also have an email so you can send us ideas. It is murderersandmonsters1311@gmail.com, or you can contact Shelby or myself by sending us a message on our Facebook group page. We love you all very much. Thank you so much for y'all's support, and we will be back with y'all next week. Always remember, monsters do exist.
Don't be a victim.
I'm going to have to. There it is. I'm going to have to cut this part out. This one.